School Leadership Podcast from NAHT Edge and NAHT.
Hello, you're listening to the School Leadership Podcast brought to you by NAHT Edge and NAHT. In this podcast, we hear from NAHT's new General Secretary, Paul Whiteman, and also get an update from Dame Alison Peacock on how the Chartered College of Teaching is doing as it comes up for its one-year anniversary.
This is the School Leadership Podcast.
Now, last September on this podcast, we spoke with the CEO of the newly founded College of Teaching, Dame Alison Peacock. Just over a year on, Edge director James Bowen caught up with Alison to find out how things have moved on for the organisation over the last 12 months and to find out whether her early ambitions for the college had been realised.
Yes, it's been nearly a year now that I've been in post as CEO because I started after the Christmas holidays, left my headship. And sitting here now, 11 months later, gosh, an enormous amount has happened. So, essentially, the core piece of work that we have wanted to do is to become a player in the educational landscape, for people to recognise what is a professional body, such as a Chartered College of Teaching, what are we all about, why might we contribute, what can we do to help. What does it mean to be a professional and how can the Chartered College help with that? And then also, you know, what are the kinds of things that we can get on and do that will enhance teachers' roles within school and enable them to feel more connected, more informed, more inspired as a profession? So, in the last year, what have we done? Well, we've built our membership from absolutely ground zero, so we didn't have any existing membership. And now, sitting here today, we are on the brink of 10,000 members, which is pretty much 1,000 members a month, which is very pleasing to us. I mean, I don't want to sound complacent because I'd love to have even more. But that notion that we are now at that sort of quite an important milestone, I think, of 10,000 members, shows that people are coming to us wanting to sign up, wanting to join in with what we're doing. And I think a big part of that has been the things that we've been able to achieve in that time. So the journals that we're producing, the events that we're running, the presence that we have in terms of an increasingly authoritative voice in the sector, the attendance at about a zillion conferences. I need some sort of flying machine to get me up and down the country, and so do others on the team. All of this has started to get to the point where I think once we finish the end of this term and it's Christmas, I think we will, as a team, collapse in a heap. I think this has been a pretty exciting first year for any new organisation.
And have you sensed any sort of change in people's perceptions of the college over that period? Yeah. Be that teachers, be that, you know, the wider world of education. Has that shifted, do you think?
I think there's been a palpable shift already. It's really interesting. I mean, of course, I would be the one that's totally tuned into, you know, any comment on social media. I'm there, I know it, I know what's going on. You know, I'm constantly listening and try. And we have, you know, with the membership that exists currently, I write to the membership every Saturday, and quite often we ask for people's opinions about things, or we ask people to get in touch with us if they would like to become involved. So we get a lot of dialogue coming back from membership. Obviously, they're the audience that you would think, well, clearly they know about us because they've joined us. But also, when I speak at conferences, and I must have spoken, oh my goodness, I don't like to think, how many thousands of teachers and heads have I spoken to over the last year? Almost universally, there's a recognition that this is an idea whose time has come. You know, the idea of having a body that really presents a coherent, authoritative voice about the evidence related to pedagogy and research that will enable us to make good decisions as professionals, as opposed to trying to do everything that people ask us to do. It feels like it's really needed. You know, it plays to the whole recruitment, retention, workload issues that are very prevalent in schools. And the response to a kind of overarching positivity that says we should be proud. You know, wherever I go, I'm talking about we should be proud to say we're teachers, regardless of how long we may have been a head teacher or CEO or wherever. You know, ultimately, within the education profession, we should be proud to say that we're teachers, and we need to recognise all the things that we do so well, because there has been such a discourse of blame quite often, but also And certainly I was subject to that myself and still am as a CEO, that notion that one day they'll find me out. You know, there's that whole kind of thing that goes on which makes you think, oh, I'm only as good as my last day's work. And I think if we're too focused on the things we haven't done yet and forget all of the massive impact that we have in society, we do ourselves a disservice. So I've been trying to sort of talk us up. Seems to be working.
And in terms of that kind of awareness of the college, do you think, are we at a stage now where most teachers up and down the country have heard of the college? Or do you still think there's, you know, do you still go to parts of the country as large people say, I've never heard of it?
Yes, probably. I think, so we're a very small organisation. So one of the ironies of that is that getting one's message out there in terms of marketing, it's expensive, it's difficult. So I think a real milestone for us was that, of course, we had our big national conference back in February, which was very successful, and the Secretary of State came and spoke at that. And then what we're doing since then is we started to organise termly conferences, which we're calling our third space events. And these link to the theme of the journal. So we held an event a couple of weeks ago in Bristol, third space event, focusing on the theme of assessment, because the journal, guest edited by Dylan Williams, all focusing on that theme. What was really interesting to me, though, was that the audience that came to that conference were not the typical Saturday conference audience. And I know that because I speak at a lot of Saturday conferences and I run conferences through Beyond Level, so I see a lot of the audience. Typically an audience for one of those Saturdays, they're typically clearly sort of social media followers. It's sort of part of the Twitter bubble, if you like, and they're always very positive and it's a great thing to go to. But the audience that came to the Third Space event in Bristol was a much more mature audience. There were many more head teachers, heads of departments, colleagues who may also work in an advisory role. A huge kind of sense of appreciation for the event and the quality of what happened, but they weren't, you know, they were sort of openly saying, and they'd come from all over the country, but they weren't the kind of people that typically would spend a Saturday doing something like this. So I think as they arrived, there was an element of feeling a little bit kind of noble for even having arrived in the first place. By the time people were leaving at the end of the day, they were saying, this has been so important, this has been so useful, this has been really, really good. And I think what happens then is colleagues like that then go back into their own networks and share and start to say, well, this was something that we went to via the Chartered College. And the other thing that's starting to happen is, probably when we last spoke, I envisaged that we would have regional networks that would be based in each of the, like the RSC regions. I thought we'd probably have 8 regional networks and they would link to a university and that kind of thing. And that we would probably provide a small amount of Pump Prime funding. I thought that was what we would do. But then, once the membership started to build and we started to ask members about networking and how might we have a regional presence across the country, people started saying to us, well, we're doing this and we're doing this. And so we decided that instead of allocating a kind of one hub in each of the regions, we would say to our members, if you would like your existing network or you'd like to form a network that would be part of Chartered College, apply. And so there was a process whereby people applied to establish networks. We then provide a resource in terms of funds they can apply for publicity, for catering, that kind of thing. We've provided them pull-up banners and we've given them advice and support around marketing and comms and so on. So I think at the last count we have over 70 of these networks across the country. Now they will be, I hope, the engine of, you know, letting people know that this is something worth getting involved in. That feels very legitimate sort of grassroots kind of response, which is exactly what's needed, because the profession needs to speak for itself rather than have another agency telling them what to do. And this is absolutely, we're not about telling people what to do.
And I want to pick up on some sort of specifics now in terms of what the college is doing. I'm interested in this wellbeing programme. I think obviously wellbeing very high on the agenda at the moment, and obviously the college are kind of picked up on that and are running with it. What's the wellbeing programme about?
So we have Dr. Tim O'Brien, who is employed at UCL as an academic, and also his colleague Dr. Dennis Guiney, who, and both of them have a psychotherapy background, but also Tim used to be deputy head teacher of an EBD school, and that school ran from from a failing school. So very sort of grounded, practical experience of working with youngsters with, you know, challenging behaviour, but also really understanding that the whole wellbeing agenda is so fundamental to how we work together as a society. They were part of, they were sort of external researchers that we used when we were doing some early kind of soundings with the profession up and down the country about the Chartered College and what we should offer. And one of the things that emerged from their discussions with teachers was that the opportunity to have someone to talk to and someone to deeply listen to one's experience of senses of well-being or anxiety within the role of teaching, that it was a very rare thing to have any space, to have anybody to listen to you. And so we decided really as an experiment, as some kind of field work, if you like, to try and run some events across the country in each of the opportunity areas where a small group of teachers, so the most we would ever recruit onto a day would be 20, have the opportunity to come and learn more about what the research says about notions of well-being, but also to examine their own things that are going on within their own working lives and how they may take on some form of project and then come back on a second day, usually about 5 or 6 weeks later, and relay back some of the things they've tried in the workplace. So this is a kind of, it's a small scale, just one of the small things that we're doing, but something that we felt was too important to ignore.
And you mentioned there that the chartered teacher status. Yes. This is really interesting. I met a colleague recently, a member of NHTH actually, who said, you know, I've just applied to be one of the first cohort in the chartered teacher programme. This sounds exciting, but I'll be honest with you, I didn't know a lot about it or fundamentally what it was trying to achieve. So could you perhaps just tell us about what is the chartered teacher status and what yes. people expect from it?
So the Secretary of State, Justine Greening, as you know, is a chartered accountant, and other professions quite often have a very rigorous process that one goes through to achieve the status of being chartered, whether it's an engineer, accountant, surveyor, whoever it might be. So we have a Royal Charter, and so therefore one of our unique kind of offers, if you like, as a professional body is to provide that status. Now, subject associations also can offer chartered science teacher and so on, but that generic across the board, what does it mean to be an expert in pedagogy? We started to design a programme. We have worked with colleagues across a whole range of schools, colleagues in HEIs. We've done a lot of research into other professional qualifications across the globe. So we designed a programme which is really quite rigorous, actually. It really is rigorous. It has a written examination as part of it. It has an observation exercise as part of it. There is a mentor provided for each candidate. There's a set of professional principles against which people will have to assess themselves and provide evidence against. It takes 14 months, and the first pilot is starting in January. We said that the maximum that we could have onto our first pilot cohort would be 150 teachers. We've had more applicants than we've got successful candidates. We're clear that the bar is quite high even just to get onto the programme, leave alone be able to pass, because if it's something you just do, and you might as well just send someone out a certificate in the post. So it needs to have a real strength of rigour about it. But actually, when I speak to teachers about it, it's almost like they're like, okay, make it tougher. We're here, you know, we want to do this. So it starts in January, and we've got applicants from early years right the way through to FE. Some of the participants even have a PhD already. So, you know, we've got a really high caliber first cohort. And the whole point is to learn from it. That's why it's a pilot. But yeah, we've had a really strong response.
And what do you think their motivation is? Why are people signing up for it?
Well, I wonder.
It sounds quite rigorous. Sounds quite a tough programme. People obviously themselves through something.
I think, essentially, it's because when it comes down to it, you know, we know that the job of being a teacher is really hard. And when you do the job well, to gain some recognition, and it's not financial recognition, this is not linked to a pay packet, but to gain recognition from others that says, you know, you're doing a really fine job, in very difficult circumstances, it seems to be something that people are very keen to gain. And you know, in terms of careers, you know, it may well be that we get to the point where to be chartered does attract a premium, because you know, if you're recruiting someone and they say, well, actually, I'm a chartered teacher, one would hope that that would come with an immediate sort of seal of, ooh, you know, quite like that person on my staff. But given that we're only starting with 150 in January, and given that we've got 500,000 teachers, there's quite a long way to go before this becomes something that is, I would say, in 10 years' time, potentially, you know, we could have quite a few thousand chartered teachers by that point. But I think the thing is to have the bar quite high, and it won't be something that everybody will want to do. But I do think it contributes to the whole piece about how do we enhance the status of the profession.
Is there something in here as well about career progression? I remember hearing you saying something probably 6 months or so ago about, you know, up until now it's always felt like to take the next step in your career equals leadership, that you have to kind of go from teacher through to leadership. And for some people that's obviously the right journey. Is there something in this about for those who don't aspire to a leadership position having that separate career development?
Is that... I think probably as we're starting to work around this, I'm thinking there's probably three routes. So the first might be that traditional route, as you suggest, of, you know, aspiring towards leadership. The second, through chartered teacher status or through further professional study, which might be more academic study, but then the notion of putting one's subject or one's specialism in the classroom at the forefront of saying, I want to be, you know, I want my career to be based working with children and young people, and I want recognition for that. And I think the third career pathway potentially is in that pathway of mentoring others, growing other teachers, so that whether that's working in a teaching school, whether that's working in HEI in terms of teacher education, whether it's about being a mentor for colleagues as they grow through their careers. I mean, we know from the evidence that's emerging that high quality mentoring is a really important factor as to whether young teachers stay or leave the profession. Having that notion that you've got someone that is going to be a sounding board but also provide you with some expertise that you need to build, and the idea that we leave university or school direct or whatever the route out into teaching is, the idea that we leave that and we're fully fledged and we've learned everything there is to know, is just, nobody really believes that. You know, you have to constantly grow and change and adapt, don't you? So having the right culture within your school. And I think one of the other things that's really, again, unique about the Chartered College is, regardless of the situation one's school is in, you know, one can become a member of the Chartered College and participate in professional learning, even if your own school hasn't got any budget to do so, even if your own school is heavily focused on the accountability agenda because maybe they need to move into a different Ofsted category or whatever it might be. You know, you're able to take hold of your own professional learning journey, if you like, by being a member. And that really pretty much hasn't existed before. I mean, the membership's £45. It's not a lot of money for people. Less than £1 a week to join.
And of course, the other thing you've mentioned was the journal, which has obviously been a big thing for the college. And I think we've had two journals out now.
Yes.
So I suppose it's interesting to sort of how do you think it was received? And also what I suppose I'm interested in is, how are you hoping that teachers and schools are going to use the journal?
Yeah, so the I had a meeting with one of the advisors at the DfE last January, just after I'd come into post. And he was very exercised about how on earth were we going to produce something that was rigorous and yet non-ideological, and how are we going to achieve this balance, and how are we going to make sure that we didn't just play to one kind of particular audience, and what about all that? And I must confess, as I was listening to him, I was thinking, I haven't got a clue how we're going to do all of this. But we appointed Kat Scott as our Director of Research. We then were very fortunate that Miriam Davey came to us from Bloomsbury Press. And we've extended the team still further from that point. And we set up a research panel and an editorial board. And one of the early signs that the Chartered College was onto something really important was that globally recognised names in terms of academia joined the board. So, you know, colleagues like Professor Rob Coe, but also Professor Dylan William and John Hattie and so on. And these are big names. Becky Francis. These are people who said, we will help with this. We think this is really important. And also the Education Endowment Foundation, you know, have a resource, quite a significant resource, to carry out research. But together with Sutton Trust and others, they were also recognising that after 5 years of investing in research, in terms of teachers' actual knowledge about what might they do in the classroom that could have more impact on youngsters, wasn't necessarily shifting the dial at all. So we decided for that reason to call the journal Impact, because we want it to be that kind of grit in the oyster, if you like, between the research over here, the pedagogy over there, and in the middle, how can we bring the two together and think about real classrooms? And then what we're developing at the moment are resources to go alongside the journal that will be freely available to members, that they will be able to use, whether that's film clips, suggestions of professional learning activities with networks or with colleagues in school, to really engage with the content in the journal and go and try things in their classroom and then report back. And the real magic will happen when we actually get that right back to us, and we can then start to share some stories of practice with our members that have been inspired by the research within the journal. So then the cycle will be complete and then we start again. So it's a termly publication. Next term, Professor Sarah Jane Blakemore from UCL, who has written about the teenage brain, she is guest editing the journal, and we're looking at the science of learning, which is absolutely fascinating. I'm just reviewing her book at the moment that is published in the spring, and she's spent her whole life researching the kind of science, if you like, of what happens in the brain when we learn in different ways and how we react to sort of different stimuli and all kinds of things. So I think that journal is really going to be quite groundbreaking. And it's really how we get from the journal into the classroom, because even just having the journal through the post might make you feel good and you might kind of stroke the cover a bit and flick through it, but actually reading it and then applying something takes something else, which is why I think the networks and the resources for staff meetings and so on start to get into that space, I hope. People are telling us already that they're using the journal in that way. So we're just hoping to extend that a bit more.
And I want to sort of bring us full circle now. And so we are a year in. This time last year, you were saying cheerio to your school, and you obviously came to the college with a vision and a plan. Mm. Has that vision changed at all, do you think? Do you see things differently? Have the plans for the college changed now you've been here for a year?
I think the fundamental vision is the same. But I think I've got a greater clarity in my own mind that what's the potential of what could be achieved as a result of the self-improving system, schools working in new collaborative ways that they weren't even doing 5 years ago, that the role of a chartered college to really draw together inspirational, impactful practice that in classrooms and share those stories and amplify that knowledge around the system. I actually think there isn't another organisation doing that. You know, I think if we've got leaders who are really informed about high quality practice in classrooms, they are less likely to demand practices that perhaps fill a lot of time but aren't necessarily very impactful. And if we have teachers who are inspired by what they hear from a range of different classrooms within the country and across the world, they've got another resource to pull on rather than just downloading a lesson plan. They've got a whole kind of community of transformative learning to tap into. So I'm hoping that all of that energy re-inspires the profession. It needs to be re-inspired. We need our heart back, I think. And if we regain that, and I absolutely think we will, I think all the signs are right. I think Ofsted are really listening to the profession. We've got a Secretary of State who's really listening. All the opportunities are there to do something amazing. So I suppose, if anything, the vision hasn't changed, it's just got stronger.
NAHT Edge is a union and professional association aimed at teachers with leadership responsibilities. Whether you're a subject coordinator, year leader, key stage leader, early years leader, Senko, or head of department, we offer full trade union protection and high quality advice. In addition, our weekly newsletter and monthly podcast keeps you up to speed with the latest developments in education. Membership of NAHT Edge costs just £13.50 a month. Find out more by visiting www.nahtedge.org.uk. It's time now to hear from NAHT's new General Secretary, Paul Whiteman. Paul's now been in post for 3 months, and he started by reflecting on how he's found this new role.
So it's tremendously busy, even busier than I thought it would be, but just as rewarding, if not even more so. So what have I been up to? Looking at making sure that all of our kind of internal structures and everything are fit for purpose and will support what we want to do, and then getting out and about and making sure that I'm seeing all the people that I need to see, both in Westminster and then out and about in the regions and in the branches, and making sure that I'm listening to members so that we can properly articulate their voice when we do see the policy makers and the decision makers. So really rewarding. I've done more miles in the car and by train than I've possibly done in years gone by, but it's been really, really enjoyable meeting everybody.
And what was it about the role that first appealed to you? Why did you want to be a General Secretary of a school leaders union?
It's the four and a half years that I'd spent with NAHT before the position became vacant had really shown me the difference that school leaders make in education and the difference that they make to children's lives. And having an opportunity to really be part of that and begin to shape some of that, articulate the voice of those that really know best for children and how to, you know, take them from the early years right the way through to when they become, you know, hopefully really productive members of society, really grabbed my imagination. And it's a tough gig. It's really, really difficult. And the pressures that are on school leaders, for me, are a massive professional challenge to do whatever I can to help solve those.
And I suppose that's a nice place to finish, really, in terms of looking to the future. What are your hopes for the association going forwards over the next few years?
I want us to be the voice that everybody listens to in terms of making decisions and understanding what happens in education. And the three areas that I'm really focusing on in terms of our mission, if you like, for want of a better term, is to look at our growth. Let's make sure that we continue to grow with education and that we reflect the shape of education so that when we're articulating the voice of the professionals there, it's a true and faithful voice that we're making. And then the way you do that really is to create those local communities of professionals around our local areas of associations, so our local branches and regions, so that people have a safe place to come and talk about education and the profession of education, make their point heard, and actually leave that meeting or that place of interaction a bit better off than when they walked in, so that their job becomes a little bit easier the next day than it was the day before.
Teaching. Leadership, and the latest developments in schools.
Well, that's all from Paul, and in fact, all we have time for in this episode. If you've enjoyed the podcast, don't forget you can make sure every episode comes to you as soon as it becomes available by subscribing on iTunes. You can also leave a review. We'd love to hear from you. We'll see you next time. NAHT is a professional association and union for school leaders. NAHT Edge is the part of our association aimed specifically at aspirational middle leaders. To discover more about the benefits of being an NAHT Edge or NAHT member, go online to nahtedge.org.uk/join or www.naht.org.uk/join. You can, of course, follow us on Twitter at NAHT Edge and at NAHT News.